The difference between an agent and a realtor is real. Realtors have the expertise to find exactly what you need and the ethics to do the right thing, even when it's the harder thing. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. That's who we are.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Oh man, oh man, oh man, we're back. It is Thursday and we're here to talk about cannabis with, drumroll please, actually I could probably do the drumroll, we have a soundboard thing here in the office, but with Javier Jase. What's up, my friend? How are you?
How are you, Mr. Elliot Lane? Again, from Detroit, making me jealous.
Yes, you should be jealous. This place is awesome. They got the tech, they got the anchor desk, and AT is in person, and that is the biggest blessing a man can get right there. Y'all, welcome to Cannabis Insider from Benzinga. Hope you're staying tuned from over Mitch. Looking at the cannabis markets today, we're down like 2.5% to 3% for the most part on every major cannabis stock, with the exception of a few, which we will get to. But first and foremost, we always like to pick Javier Jase's brain. What are you thinking about today, man? What's got your mind in cannabis?
Before that, hello to Born to Be Free, always in the chat. And I'm curious, what are the books behind you?
The books behind me? Oh, we have a book about DAO, DAOs. We also have Color Me Shooketh, a book about Elon Musk. That was sarcasm. I'm not surprised at all. plus other investment books. But best investment advice you can get is not here, because we don't give investment advice. We just talk about finance. That's all we do. Right, Javi?
Sir, we have some good analysts who are up for the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Award. From Vivian Azer to Pablo Swanich, they do provide some good investment.
And y'all stay tuned. So if you watch this show on the reg, you know that we host one of the best cannabis events in the industry, bzcannabis.com, to check it out. But speaker announcements to come soon. Pretty much every single major tier one multi-state operator will be present at our event, Chicago, September 13th and 14th at the Palmer House. And we just received some cool confirmations today, of which you just mentioned maybe perhaps one. We're not going to say, but it's going to be a powerhouse lineup. If you like the cannabis space, if you want to put money into it, or if you work in it, you need to be there. That being said, Javi, what else, man? What else is up? Let's talk through some news. But we have an awesome interview we're going to get today, too.
Yes, sir. Two interviews. But, you know, we have, talking about analysts, Pablo Swanich, in fact, from Cantor Fitzgerald, weighed in on the Hexo Tilray deal. Hexo, which is H-E-X-O, reported a staggering loss of $152.7 Canadian in the third quarter of 2022 last Wednesday. And, you know, this same week, Tilray amended the deal with Hexo to address the current market conditions. And they're basically getting Hexo cheaper, right? And Pablo said that the amendment suggests that Tilray would buy the outstanding convertible debt, which currently amounts to $185 million at a 10.8% discount. In his view, the valuation that Hexo currently has, which is $100 million in market cap, is pretty low. And he attributes it to high debt, negative earnings and cash flow, continued shareholder dilution risks. But he still said that the acquisition could definitely help Tilray, emphasizing that Tilray could leverage the current state of the markets and the crisis that Hexo is facing to negotiate the terms, spend less cash, and eventually convert the debt in a 50% equity stake in the Canadian company instead of 37%, which was the initial agreement.
Jeez, man, there's so much to unpack there. And this is the second day in a row that we've gotten to talk about Hexo, H-E-X-O on NASDAQ. You guys, I mean, for me and Javi, you can tell me if I'm being hyperbolic in any way, if I shouldn't be looking at it like this. But looking at this performance, looking at the fact that, You know, I mean, Pablo still calls them the number one Canadian recreational company. They are the number one company in that side of the market in Canada. And that's a $4 billion Canadian market, and they're valued at less than $100 million. That's not only bad for Hexo, it's bad for the market. Am I wrong? Yeah.
Actually, no. And it ties very well to the question in the chat from me now, who says, is cannabis like CGC, well, Canopy Growth Corporation, Tilray, ever recover, or will it go to zero? I think it will recover.
It will 100% recover. CGC is too big and has too many assets. Yeah. I'm not saying we can have debates all day on whether it's well run or you like their decisions or whatnot, but CGC is a massive company, and they have a footprint in just multinationally at a large scale. They're not going
anywhere. Exactly. I mean, the market is tough generally. The market is tough for cannabis. And these Canadian companies, of course, had great expectations at first. They got a bunch of money, right? Of course, investors are a little bit pissed that their performance wasn't great, but they have built massive infrastructure. They have a very, very valuable assets, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like they're going anywhere. It's best case or worst case scenario, however you want to see it, they will consolidate into larger companies. They might merge in the future. We have no idea. But the one thing I know for sure is that neither CGC or Tilray are going anywhere in the near future.
Exactly with Tilray, and I was going to bring Tilray back up, seems like they are getting a nice revised deal here with Hexo. I mean, if there was ever an opportunity at M&A in the future that we could look at and say, that could mean that, it's probably what they're doing with Hexo. Hexo also needs to recover a little bit so shareholders don't freak out if they do buy them. Which I think is why it's an option right now.
In the U.S., Attorney General Merrick Garland says the Justice Department intends to address cannabis issues in the coming days. This is in response to a senator. And he said, in the days ahead, we'll address these issues, whatever that means. And it says, with respect to those jurisdictions where marijuana use and sales are lawfully regulated, there's even greater reason to conserve prosecutorial resources so that we can focus our attention on violent crimes and other crimes that cause societal harm and endanger our communities. Something, of course, the general population has been saying for many, many years. One of the many reasons to not prosecute people for cannabis is we spend a bunch of money for a plant. Come on, just stop it. Then we're talking about deficit. We're complaining about inflation. We're saying we don't have money for schools. We're saying we don't have money for the massive infrastructure investments that we need. We don't have money to address gun issues. But we have money to prosecute people for two joints. Get out of here.
Well, I think we're going to, the more that these large incidents tend to happen, like Montrezl Harrell earlier this week, who plays for the Charlotte Hornets, that is going to be a large scale case. If he goes to jail for this, there will be an uproar. It's not going to be pretty, especially for Kentucky, my home state. Gotta love them, but not for this one. Tie this into the other piece of news, though, Javi. Before we go any further on Attorney General, there's a Biden administration. The drug czar offered some interesting takes today.
Yeah, man, I love this. Late last night. Biden administration is considering safe consumption sites and cannabis decriminalization to address public health emergency. They said they will prioritize harm reduction as a response to drug abuse while examining information on marijuana legalization and safe injection sites, said White House drug czar Dr. Rahul Gupta, not related to Dr. Sanjay Gupta.
Now, Javi, is this specific to cannabis, or is this also other drugs?
So, I mean, the decriminalization would be for cannabis. The safe consumption sites apply to other drugs. I don't know which ones. Of course, injection sites might reference to heroin and other opioids. No. Right, but this is something that we've seen done very successfully around the world. From Germany to the Netherlands, mm-hmm. Portugal.
Even in California, there are safe consumption sites.
Exactly. You know, what this means is you go to a place where you're supervised and you get a clean needle, right? That is a lot. People go to a place where they know what they're getting. They have the trip that they so desperately need because, of course, they're addicted to a certain substance. But they know that the needle is clean. They won't overdose.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, Javi, playing just a tad bit of devil's advocate here. That's all, right? So I completely agree with you on the safe consumption site side. I'm just curious at the perception of including cannabis with these other quote unquote drugs in the same type of consumption site. Oh, yeah. No, you're cutting me off.
Right. So one thing is decriminalizing cannabis, and the other one is safe consumption sites. They say we have this drug emergency, this opioid epidemic. Right. How do we address it? We know that cannabis can be helpful. So let's not prosecute people. Let's not make them afraid. Let's tell them it's not the same to get caught with heroin than to get caught with cannabis, number one. The other one is, if you're still going to do heroin, go do it safely. The role of the state, the number one role of the state to any sensible person is to take care of its people, of its population, not to tell it what to do and what not to do, which, of course, is another big role of the state, right? But deep down, the main role of the state is taking care of its people, right? Making sure that you don't die, right?
Javi for president. Javi for president, 2023. Let's go. All right.
President when I was,
he gets the double P sign. He Richard Nixoned you on Cannabis Insider. That was fantastic. Thank you, Javi.
I wanted to be a president when I was 3, 4, and 5 years old. I was going to kindergarten in Argentina. I was born in the States, so... And everyone was asked, like, hey, what do you want to do as a grown-up? And I want to be a fireman. I want to be a policeman. I was like, I want to be U.S. president. And even though the classes were in Spanish, every teacher would call me Mr. President. So they would go like, hola, Mr. President.
I am fully and 100% going to say, pura vida, Mr. President. Like, from now on when I see you. Pura vida, President Argentinian action figure. The queen wave. All right, Avi. All right, so let's circle back and do a few more news points at the end. Thank you for contributing, Born to be Free. Dustin, Tiny Pie Media says, Aaron Bree looks different today. I hope he looks cuter. Oh, there he is. And my joke's done. Thank you, AB.
Sorry, I had to come.
Say hi.
I just wanted to come crash and make my first guest appearance ever on Cannabis Insider.
Hey, you get a 2-sentence breakdown of what you think of cannabis stocks. He's trying to be polite right now.
Wait, I have a question for you. Do we have 1 minute? Can you share that story, the cocaine story for Bernie Madoff?
Oh, I thought you were talking about a different story. I was going to say, I won't be able to share that one.
man.
I'll pull from Warren Buffett here and say, a lot of times the best investors are greedy when others are fearful. And fearful when others are greedy. So now we are in a cycle where it seems as if fear is dominating the cannabis stocks. So,
man,
it could be an opportunity.
What a freaking appearance. What a freaking cameo by AB. That's awesome. If this wasn't a mic, I'd clap, but I feel like that would be awful. Well done, AB. Awesome. So we have actually a president joining us today, just a president of a company, Rob Sechrist from Polaris Equity Group. Y'all see that? Y'all see that through line there?
It's
Shut up, you guys. Let's play him in, AT. Rob, what's up, man? We're just joking around, apparently.
Good to see you guys. You guys YouTube. Are characters over there.
Yeah. We got to keep it light and lively, right? The cannabis industry makes us not fearful, right? You're not a fearful guy. You attack the markets like nobody else. You know, give us a quick rundown, a little bit of what you do, and then let's jump into the lending market and the debt capital flow, because that has been very eventful.
So our strategy and approach to attacking the cannabis market is a little bit different. We're not publicly traded. We're an alternative investment that our share price remains stable at the same every month. And so we are a private mortgage REIT, and we are simply doing lending to the cannabis, to the owners of cannabis use properties. And most of ours are owner users across the country. Today, I think we've done about 68 transactions for about, ironically, $420 million today. With 30 something payoffs, and we're the largest privately held bridge lender in the country. We were the first dedicated lender to the cannabis sector in 2016. We were the first to launch a dedicated funding vehicle for the sector in 2018, the first to convert to a private mortgage REIT in 2020. Most recently, we were investment grade rated. And we completed the first private offering for a institutional bond offering and brought in some of the largest names that you would be shocked at that are in our institutional bond that are not cannabis friendly, which are publicly traded banks, insurance companies, fund of funds and fund managers and things like that. So the market is evolving and more things are coming available. And along with that investment grade rating, we upsized our offering to $1 billion. So we were the first $1 billion fund in the sector as well.
Wow. That's incredible. You know, also, you should just stop now. You said you have 420 million. I think you did it. Congrats. Yeah.
Well, so we have about 300 million assets under management. So we've done 420 million in collective deals. So some of those have paid off. But if it helps you, Elliot, we believe that we'll be at 400 to 500 million. So I'll try to land on 420 million of assets under management for you for our Chicago conference. How's that?
Hey, deadlines are what make things happen. Hey, you know, I'll let Javi jump in a minute. I just love to ask this question, though. Since you are active in quite a few aspects of lending, where is the money going right now? Or is it kind of spread out across debt flow in terms of real estate or in terms of equipment financing or BDC? Like, what are companies looking for most right now?
Yeah, so, you know, our origination team might have a more granular answer for you, but in general, we are a real estate lender, so we're not going to see those transactions for just specifically equipment finance. And our two peers that can do the same size and scale of transactions as us that are publicly traded, they're more of the corporate debt or BDC model, so they're not quite exactly a direct competitor to us. They have a different lending basis, much higher proceeds than what we would establish on our basis of just valuing the real estate on its own. We are focusing on just loaning to the real estate asset. That's what we do. We do include in our proceeds to build these assets out the equipment. So we do want to make sure that when we originate a transaction that we've covered all the costs for the acquisition, the tenant improvements, and the equipment to make sure that that property can generate cash flow to be paying our loan once it's been built. And then we also launched our fully stabilized lending product late last year, and that's a 5-year term. So we've got some place for our borrowers now to go to, as opposed to just being stuck in a bridge loan. And you know, as we're waiting for the rest of the markets to mature and more and more banks to come online.
What about states, right? Because from what I'm hearing, you know, in the finance world, the allocation of resources among states is changing a little bit. What are you seeing? Like, which states are really driving more interest and requiring more capital?
So how cannabis operators look at it and how we look at it is different. If you're a cannabis operator, you're looking to get market exposure in different states and be first one to enter there and to get market share. We are not in the business of being a cannabis business. We're in the business of lending to the owners of that real estate, and those tenants are those cannabis operators. So for us, we see, you know, dozens and dozens of transactions a week. And what we're really looking for is the most experienced operator with the strongest sponsor with the best piece of real estate out there. And so we're looking across the entire United States and all the states that are licensed to determine which are best transactions for us to move forward. And so we're not saying, hey, we haven't done a transaction in Florida. We really need to put a pin in that state. Let's just go ahead and do that one. Now, it's just not that way. And we also look at it differently than a cannabis operator. And let's use Florida as an example. It's a limited license state that requires you to be vertically integrated. That's great for a cannabis operator. You've got a protection and a barrier to market entry. And if you're in there, it's going to be hard for somebody to compete against you. But if I'm your lender, it's going to be really difficult for me to replace that tenant. So I have to adjust my underwriting procedures in way that we look at things there, because if an operator in Florida fails, most likely Curaleaf or, you know, another one of the operators is just going to absorb that market share. They're not going to go buy that other license and buy that whole facility. They would just increase the efficiency and the production of their existing facility. So it's a different look from a lender side than it is from a cannabis tenant operator side.
That's interesting. A quick follow-up to that, because you know, we do see obviously press releases and news releases from companies all day, every day. So there is one of your competitors when they release news releases, they release, they generally follow it and they're somewhere with the number of states they're in, the number, the amount of square feet that they have in the portfolio, the number of portfolio companies or deals they've done, something of that nature. But mm-hmm. it sounds to me like the last one and the square footage are the most important to what you're saying. But any insight as to why they would include the states in there if it doesn't really even matter?
Well, I think that they're just trying to show the diversity of the portfolio. I believe that we've been in as many as six or eight states. Then some of those states we've been paid off, so we didn't have an exposure, but we're closing back up into some of those. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think that they're just trying to show the diversity of that. I think that what's kind of probably more important is to show the diversity between limited license states and non-limited license states, because if and when you get the federal policy deconflicted from state policy or federal legalization, all those licenses and those premiums that were paid and those limited market states that were protected from best in class operators from California being able to import there are going to have a different optics to have to deal with. And especially when you had a license that might have been paid for $50 million in Florida or $80 million in New York, those licenses may not have the same value anymore if you can cross state lines, you know? So I think that these are things that lenders need to be thinking about in how they approach their diversity strategy. It's more important, I think, to be blending across different types of license states than just, you know, getting another state on your bandwidth. And additionally, you want to be looking at the ratio of customers in that state as proportionate to your loan sizing in that state as well. And California being the largest market in the world, our two peers are still reluctant to come in here, and that's great. And we understand why. They don't quite understand the market. It's unlimited license state, and there's just some hesitancy there. We get that. We understand the market, but we also have a different lending model. We're only lending on the value of the replacement cost of the real estate on a cost basis, and we're not lending on enterprise value of the company. Accounts receivable and licenses as well. So we have a different methodology. So we're not quite apples to apples there.
I would love to look at like some upcoming trends here. So I'm going to stick to Chicago and Illinois because we're going to be there in September. Hey, and Rob's going to be there with us as always. We love you, Rob. You're a big supporter of our events and bring some great insight, but looking specifically at that Illinois market, man, 185 new licenses. That's going to be pretty massive. Do you look at that and say, where can I get involved? Or how do you look at that type of a news release if it even matters at this point?
It's back to the same point that I made before. It doesn't matter if it's 10,000 or five that come online. We're looking at all the deals that come across our desks every single week and looking at what is the best fit for the best return for the least amount of risk in that transaction. So we have to think about how many operators are there, how that could eventually affect the market. And we did have to develop our own proprietary database to understand that. So the mm-hmm. existing market information was from the cannabis brand operator side, which was Headset, New Frontiers, BDS. I think there's one or two others I just not coming to my mind right this second, but that's all from the cannabis operator side. Nobody knew what was happening on the real estate side, which is the largest asset that they're ever going to acquire. Nobody knows, has the market comps there. Nobody has the lease rate comps there. Nobody has a general database of what is the market dynamics for each one of these states, each one of these counties, each one of these cities. How much is the building department allowing to be processed to be built there? How many licenses are active in that state? How many have actually been situated to real estate? Who owns them? What types of licenses are those? We know all that information. So we built that data to know, has the market been overbuilt in any state yet? We need to know that. It also was that we were the first to determine that we believe that the entire United States market, once it's completely built out, the real estate side is about a $50 billion asset class. So we've tracked about $3 billion worth of trades, credits issued or trades issued on that so far, but there's a long ways to go there.
I'm going to throw out a tough one to close it up. What's interesting to you in the markets right now? Whenever I ask you this, you come up with something quite unexpected and different, right? So what is fascinating you right now?
So what's happening right now is the volatility in the stock market and just the continued compression of the cannabis equities values out there. And so prior, if you would have asked me this just last time we were at the stage in Miami, you know, we didn't have the amount of volatility that we have today. And back, we think that the first thing that's going to go away in our transactions as more and more lenders come into the space and it becomes more competitive, it's going to be the, in some transactions, we have some warrants and equity kickers. And we thought that would be the first thing that went away. And it was for a while, but now about 50% of our transactions, that's back on the table. And the reason that that's the case is that these cannabis operators and the people are not able to raise the capital as easily as they once were, or they're being forced to sell it at the lowest point ever in their share valuation. And so if we can provide a mechanism where they might be able to pledge some warrants on a future value over some period of time, that becomes very attractive to people right now. So we might lean into a transaction, 1-3% higher proceeds to reduce the amount of money that they're having to come in from their side. And that's making the difference for a lot of these guys. So we're doing what we can to lean in to help them. They're grateful, but we're being rewarded and our investors are being rewarded for that. So that's a really interesting dynamic that's happened. On the other side, the bond market has completely exploded for us, and that's fine. We raise quite a bit of capital directly every month, but we had anticipated we didn't anticipate that going away, and we do plan on pulling a bond again in sometime in the future. But that market's got to stabilize.
Awesome, Rob. That was a great summation, man. Thank you for that. We're already close to time here. It sucks. Can you just give me a 1-minute breakdown, if you can, on your thoughts? This is a completely off the wall question. Has nothing to do with anything we've talked about today. On cannabis franchising, because I feel, if I'm not mistaken, you have a deal that was completed. Hey, I told you it was off the wall. I wasn't lying. It's all about real estate, right? So if you look at franchising, I mean, is that exciting to you? And does that, like, if you were to work with a franchising partner, is that a massive opportunity for you?
I want to be conscious of the time, but I'm misunderstanding. I don't know how a franchise pertains to what we do. If you could clarify the brand,
just the real estate behind it. So you work with the Item 9 Labs is the only one coming up, but right now.
Yeah, I think I know what you're saying. So, yeah. So most of our transactions are owner users. I think what you might be saying is if it's not the owner, the tenant is not the owner of their own property and somebody looking at that business model, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah. So look, that's a commonplace in a more mature market. What generally happens today is that it might start off that way, where a building real estate developer has the capital and the experience to build out the project, but they don't know, have the experience to board the tenant. And so they usually will team up with somebody to be their tenant. But what we've seen happen 9 times out of 10 is that both of them decide to make a partnership because it's such a great relationship. And so that's generally what happens. It would be very rare that you would see an existing owner user sell out their real estate to an unaffiliated party unless it's a sales leaseback.
Right. Interesting. All right, Rob.
That control, you know?
Happening. Interesting. Thank you for that, man. I appreciate the clarification there. Awesome. So Rob Sechrist, president of Polaris Equity Group, one of our mainstays here, always bringing the ammo and the heat on the debt market. We appreciate you being here and appreciate your time as always, our friend.
Great. Well, thanks guys. I'll see you in Chicago, if not sooner. I'll see you next. I'll see you on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah. Perfect. Yes. We'll see you there, my friend. All right, Javi, always a good update on debt, my friend.
Now that I know that, you know, $420 million in deals, it's maybe I run for president of Polaris.
I well, it's occupied. You might have to fight Rob for it, and I wouldn't want to do that. the man's a beast. Awesome. So we are going to finish out, as we have been for the last few episodes, as we will be for the next month or two, with interviews that we had at MJ Unpacked. We're going to be talking to the co-founder, co-CEO of Her Highness, a really cool brand focused on women and selling to women. It's really incredible what Laura
has. I have the grinder, like the golden grinder. I have the ashtray that looks like a woman's mouth. I have the golden lighter. I'm a fan of Her Highness.
I mean, it's really cool what they've built over there. So, Javi, before we get to that, any last words, my friend? Anything we should be keeping an eye on?
I mean, do you know how you say video in Spanish?
No, I don't want to guess.
Video.
it was funny. I was going to say video, but I was like, that sounds rude for me to say that, for me to assume that.
So some plugs, you know, it's plug time. Benzinga.com/cannabis for all of your daily cannabis news. 40 articles a day, all the stocks, all the policy, all the lifestyle, everything you need to know. Also, a bunch of partner content. Elplanteo.com if you speak Spanish. BZCannabis.com to check out the entire, all the details, the agenda, the speakers. Register, get a ticket for the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference. Coming to Chicago, Illinois, September 13 and 14 at the Palmer House. An experience you can't freaking miss. I mean, man, if you're doing business in cannabis and you're not at this event, you're missing out. You're losing money by not spending money on that ticket. That's all I'm going to say.
Yep. Amen, Javi. Appreciate you as always. Thanks as always to producer Aaron Thomas and to our special guest of the episode, Aaron Bree. And Rob Seacrest.
I did not forget about that. AB.
Yeah, he didn't forget about that.
Wait, forget about what?
I don't know. I didn't catch it. I was just going to let it go, but you kept it going. Jesus, Aaron.
Bernie made a story. So the other day on Instagram, he had a viral video he made.
Oh, the Bernie made it. Yeah. You want me to share it? What do you want me to do?
I think it's worth it.
You want me to put the... All right, I don't know. AT, how can we get that video pulled up?
Yeah, no, we got the shrug. We got the shrug from our producer. AT's getting PO'd. All right, we're done. Javi, you have ruined the end of this episode. You are banned. President Javier Hase of the awkwardness. AT, roll us out. We love you, Javi. Welcome back at MJ Unpacked. This is Benzinga Cannabis Insider Elliot Lane here with Laura Eisman, co-CEO, co-founder, co-cool person of Her Highness. Welcome in. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. Let's jump right in. Tell us about Her Highness.
So Her Highness is a women-focused brand, and that's saying it lightly. We have come out of the gate with this very glamorous collection of products.
See here, yeah.
Show you. This is our Get Lit Kit. So this is an example of what we have going on. Lit for a Queen.
There we go.
Great.
Yeah.
So this says a lot about women. This is about meeting women where they are. So, you know, I'm a stylish woman from New York.
We can attest. Yes.
I consume cannabis. This started because I couldn't find anything that fit into my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And there was nobody at the time when we started our business in 2016-17 that was creating and formulating with the motivation to make women feel good. Mm-hmm. And so we really saw this opportunity to bring who we are as our own market and let women almost like open the door so that women have the power to, you know, call this their own and make their own lane in cannabis. Because I think for the most part, women are trying to fit into some sort of culture, especially when you talk about older cultures like California and Colorado. New York will be a completely different story. You know, I think New York out of the gate will, all of the creative marketers, you know, I mean, that's what we do in New York.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. Creative marketing. I want to know what the thought process is in targeting a somewhat specific demographic when targeting really just women. What goes into creating that brand from a marketing and branding standpoint?
I'd like to start by saying 51% of the population is interesting when it's, you know, considered that.
That's why I say somewhat specific.
I know, but it's true. Like, you know, I think that people don't realize the power that women have, you know, as far as purchasing power. What we did was, and this accessory box is a great example, is we are meeting mainstream. So when you ask me who's our market, it's not women who consume cannabis. It's women. Mm-hmm. So women don't know enough, most women, about how they can use cannabis. You know, and I'm included in this too. You know, I'm shy with edibles because I had a bad edible experience, and so did a lot of women. Mm-hmm. You know, or, you know, they think back to like a college experience, or, you know, things have changed so much. So it's almost about educating to bring women out. So we have a CBD collection. We have an accessory collection. We sell this at Urban Outfitters, for example. Cool. And so women are discovering Her Highness, you know, in their normal shopping. Mm-hmm. And so then they get curious, and then they look into it. And then when THC comes to their state, if it's not already, we're a trusted brand, and they're looking for us. And they see us in a dispensary, and they see this on a shelf, and they're like, I love this branding, and I know this company. And so that's really been our strategy. So we're growing the THC business as we grow this mainstream business.
You send feelers out, and then you hit the market full force. I love it. So, I mean, this is obviously super impressive, but you have also taken some other unique ways to put your product in front of the cannabis community as well, by partnering with multi-state operators, by partnering with other companies. Is there one that sticks out, or how do you go about looking at partnerships for your brand?
A few stick out, and one of them that sticks out is Tilt Holdings. I know you're a fan.
I am a fan.
Gary has been extremely supportive. Merida is our main investor. Also, Mitch Bergwitz has been incredible. But as an example, so California, that was our first market. And even though we're not licensing our brand in that market, and we're in New York, but we're moving it through the supply chain. So, you know, we're buying the weed through our manufacturer, and we're, you know, they're manufacturing it, it's going to the distributor, and we're controlling that.
Right.
In all of the other states that we've entered, like Nevada, Massachusetts, and Colorado, we're working with a licensing partner so that they can take care of all of that.
Great.
And then we get a royalty off the top. And that's been very successful. I think our problem right now is we're at this moment where the demand is there. Women know about us, and we don't have the capital to supply all the packaging and everything that goes into it. And Tilt has actually stepped forward, and they're fronting us money for packaging and other things because they see the growth potential.
That's fantastic. And we'll get to the Tilt side on a Tilt interview. But, you know, I think a very worthwhile partnership to invest in a brand that is supporting over half the population. I mean, talk about a worthwhile investment. But that being said, what else can we look from you in 2022? You know, what's exciting you as you move forward?
We're at the point right now where we're talking to several MSOs because on the THC side, we need that engine behind us. Mm-hmm. We are two women founders. We're single moms. We've taken the brand to an amazing place with very little funding, and the demand is proven. Mm-hmm. So we want to be in every single legal state. We're also talking to mainstream. We're doing a lot of mainstream partnerships. So, for example, we have our Pleasure Oil, which is one of our best-selling products, which is an orgasm intensifier that women have discovered, and word of mouth are spreading word, and we're placing that into mini bars at hotels. We're talking to a few hotel chains on that end.
Yeah, wow.
And again, it's all about just spreading the word, creating that curiosity. You know, you step into CBD and then you get into THC, but it's all related. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to just, again, have a brand that meets women where they are is creating this excitement, and it's really changing the industry. I mean, you know, there are not that many women brands that are addressing women in this way. And we support women brands. We want a section in a dispensary that's specifically for women. I've walked out of more dispensaries that I can tell you where I just don't want to go to a counter and ask for a product. You know, so we're really pushing to have these areas in a dispensary where maybe it's anchored by Her Highness and all the other women brands are in there, and women just can see it when they walk in the door and they're able to pick up a package, look at the label. That's how we shop. We like to browse. We don't like to talk to a 23-year-old bartender about our sexuality and our, you know.
I couldn't imagine why. This is Laura Eisman. We are out of time, but there will be a follow-up. I mean, there has to be a powerful, powerful brand you're creating here, Laura. So thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better? You really can do it, but nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, GEICO makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Jeep Freedom Days are here, where right now, well-qualified returning FCA lessees get a low-mileage lease on the 2022 Grand Cherokee WK Laredo E4x4 for $369 a month for 36 months with $3,799 due at signing. Tax, title, license extra. No security deposit required. Call 1-888-925-JEEP for details. Requires dealer contribution, a lease through Chrysler Capital. Lessee is responsible for termination fees. Current lease must end by 7-3-23. Extra charge for miles over 30,000. Residency restrictions apply. Take delivery by 7-5-22. Jeep is a registered trademark.